When I was little, I spent a lot of time at the park. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, and she would take me and my friends there almost every day during the summer, and if we were lucky, she would buy each of us something from the ice cream truck. It was one of those lucky days when this story takes place. I was 6 or 7, and my mom had taken me and 3 other girls from the neighborhood to play at the park. It was sunny and warm, and pretty much one of those absolutely idyllic days you see in the movies. Everyone was in a good mood, my mom included, when we heard the ice cream truck approaching. She gave us all some money to buy some treats, opting to hang back and chat with a friend. After all, we weren't leaving her sight, so nothing bad could happen. The ice cream truck wasn't the one we usually saw, but it wasn't unheard of. There was quite a few that drove around town, and they would all compete to hit the park crowd. This one looked kind of run down, but when you're 7, it doesn't matter. Ice cream is ice cream. My friends and I raced to get in line, and were delighted to be the first ones there. The ice cream man seemed just as excited to see us.
"I have a special treat for you girls today,"
he told us as we handed him our money, silencing our request for the usual favorites. We were all skeptical, but he kept insisting that his special treat was much yummier than any ice cream we've ever had before. So we all shrugged and agreed. Like I said, ice cream is ice cream. The man disappeared back into the truck for a few minutes, and we could hear him giggling. Now I would find it creepy, but at the time, I thought it was just funny. A few minutes later, he handed us what looked like ordinary ice cream sundaes.
"I promise, they're extra good. Don't waste any,"
he told us with a wink. As we started walking back to my mom, the ice cream truck left quickly. That's when I remember thinking something was off, because the trucks would usually stay around much longer, getting as much business from all the kids as they possibly could. But that didn't stop me from eating the ice cream, though. But when I was eating it, I noticed that something tasted off. Soon my friends were all complaining about how our ice cream tasted funny. My mom also noticed how quickly that truck left, so she insisted on tasting mine, just to be safe. I'll never forget how quickly she marched us out of the park that day, or how horrified she looked. At the time, I didn't understand why she was so upset, until years later. She told me the ice cream had tasted like semen. The ice cream truck guy had masturbated into our sundaes. Horror story part 2. Realizing your mother recognizes the taste of semen. The police questioned my friends and I about the man in the truck, but none of us were able to give a good description. I think they must have tested the DNA in the ice cream, but I really don't remember much from the whole investigation, because my mom shielded me from it. I do know, however, that they never caught the guy. I will start off by saying that English is not my first language. Since I'm Dutch, it's a close second, so please forgive me for any grammatical errors. This happened to me when I was about 11 or 10. In my country, it's normal for elementary schools to have soccer tournaments for the kids, in mostly the last 2 grades. I decided I was going to support the kids in my grade, since we had a few good football players on the team, and I obviously wanted them to win. I head over there on my bike, and as I'm heading over, it started to rain really hard. But for some reason, me being the introvert that I am, I decided that I was going to hang out by myself at an intersection that was near the field where the tournament was being held. All of a sudden, a white van stops in front of me because the light has turned red, and I see a guy who's about 30-ish with blonde hair and a very friendly face roll his window down and call out to me. He said that he wanted to take me to the main intersection, which was 200 meters away, because it was raining really hard and he didn't want to see me get wet, which was bullshit because I was already soaked. Instantly, I got the gut feeling saying that something is off about this guy, and I remember feeling really torn because one side of me was saying to go with him and that he means well, and the other side was saying that something wasn't right. I politely declined his offer, but he kept asking me, and I kept declining and started to back away from his van. The light turned green, and he said okay and drove off. I thought this would be the last I would see of him. About 5 to 8 minutes later, the same guy in the white van stops in front of me again. He rolls down his window again and asks me if I'm sure that I don't want to lift. He says he's just going to drive me to the main intersection and that I could put my bike in the back of his van. This is when I really started to get worried. I said no thank you and started to drive towards the nearest gas station since there was a lot of people there. Since I was scared, I waited for about 10 minutes at the gas station before I quickly jumped back on my bike and went full speed towards the field where there was about 1,000 people. I never saw this guy again. To this day, I can still recall the guy's face and that he seemed really friendly. I will probably never know if his intentions were right, but it felt really off, especially after he came back a second time. I also wonder if he might have done this to other children that were more receptive, since he seemed genuinely nice and not at all like a creepy old man. So, guy in the white van, let's not meet again. Let me give some context for this briefly. I live in a city that is notorious for 24-hour services. And even for locals who aren't part of the downtown scene, certain amenities are usually open at all hours. This happened about 3 months ago. I hate studying in the afternoon, so I usually go to bed around 6 p.m., and then I wake up at midnight to finish my work. There's one cafe that is 24 hours in my area, so I usually drive down there to study before heading to school in the morning. So this one time when I was studying, I realized that I needed some colored pens and a large paper for a project due the next day. They sell these supplies at grocery stores where I live, so I found one that was nearby and drove over to pick the stuff up. I'm generally aware of my surroundings, so I made sure to park directly under a street light in front of the building. My car windows are pretty tinted, and when light shines directly on them from above, my visibility remains the same while nobody else can see inside. This becomes relevant in a moment. Anyway, I go in and do my thing. I'm holding bags in one hand, keeping the other with my keys free. After I pay, I start heading out. As I'm walking out, a white van pulls in front of where my car is parked and blocks my path. A little old lady inside rolls down the passenger window and says, "Excuse me, we're tourists and we can't find the main road back downtown. Can you come over and give us some directions, young lady?" I don't stop walking, and I veer quickly in front of their car. "No, sorry." Side note, my city is known for its downtown, universally. Every road leads to downtown. Downtown is the fucking lifeblood. And little old ladies don't often visit in white vans with blacked out windows. The whole thing was just giving off a creepy as fuck vibe. I hurried to my car and got in. My car is pretty big because my father was an ER doctor and wouldn't let me get anything smaller than an SUV citing height and weight as a primary safety measure. As I sat down, the van did not pull away. It remained parked next to my car. I locked the doors and glanced out my passenger side window, which gave me a view sight of their car due to the height of my own. This also served to provide a view through their window tint, which was ineffective due to the angle. In the back seat, there was a man with a knife. He was holding it up to his chest and straining to see through my windows. I pieced out of that pretty quickly, and I drove loops through the suburbs until I got to my school. Not too exciting, but it was pretty scary for me. So for a bit of background, I was 9 at the time and was very naive. I was visiting my cousin, who used to live in a small town with mostly farms and suburbs. All of us were bored and we decided to walk to the park about a mile away and play some baseball. It was me, my older sister, my 5 guy cousins, and some of their friends. There was about 10 of us walking through the suburbs, so nothing too dangerous. We get to the park and play for about an hour and a half when I wanted to go back. No one else wanted to, so I just went by myself. I knew my way back and it was just suburbs, so I thought it would be fine. While I was walking back across the street, an old man was laying on what I thought was his lawn. He appeared to be injured and kept saying to come help him. This man was about mid-60s, and he looked like he really needed help, so I went over, but I still kept my distance, about 5 feet. The man kept saying something I couldn't understand, so I kept getting closer. Once I was next to him, he shot up and grabbed my arm. I began screaming and thrashing as he tried to drag me into a nearby van. I tried to do everything in my power to get him away. Apparently, I screamed so loud that the neighbors came outside. Once the man saw that there were other people there, he let go of me and got back into his van and drove away. I did not speak to anyone. I just ran back as fast as I could. When I got back, I sat outside of the house and calmed down. I didn't tell my mother because I did not want me or my cousins to get in trouble, which was an incredibly stupid thing to do. The story doesn't end there. I came back the following year, and we were all watching the news. They were talking about a man who was acting like he was in need of help. Once his victims were close enough, he would grab them and shove them into his van. Then he would rape them. This sounded eerily familiar to the events of the previous year. Then the old man's mugshot appeared. I was terrified. It was the same guy. But I still did not say anything about the encounter. I still think about what could have happened to me if I didn't shout loud enough. This story actually happened to my father way back in the 1970s in his home country of Fiji, so there's no way I can get any type of newspaper article or anything like that, but I assure you this is real. I have verified this story with my mom and my uncles, and they claim it to be legit, so here we go. My dad lived in a farming area, and each of the farmhouses were a few miles apart from each other. When my dad was about 14 years old, he was invited to a sleepover at his uncle's house. My dad was fond of his uncle, so he went over for the night. His uncle had a wife and 3 kids, ages were 3 and 4, and also a baby that was about 6 months. They had a great time eating, chatting, and playing with the kids, and then it was time for bed. My dad goes to sleep and wakes up to this huge noise. Then he hears screaming and something that sounded like a gunshot. He runs to his uncle's room and sees his uncle shooting his wife and kids. My dad freaks out and runs away. He runs across the house and tries to go through a door that would lead outside, but it's jammed and won't open for some reason. It was an old farmhouse that needed a lot of work. So his only option was to run back to the other side and use the other door, which meant it would take him right past his uncle's room again. He had no choice and slowly started to walk, and as he passed, he couldn't help but to peek into the room again. He sees his uncle standing there with a gun, and as my dad is staring at him, his uncle turns around and says, "You are lucky I let you live." And he puts the gun to his head. And as my dad freaks out and starts running away, he hears one more gunshot. My dad runs out of the house and keeps running down the dirt road all the way back to his own house. Luckily, his dad is still up with some friends, drinking and playing cards. My dad basically collapses as he makes it to his front porch and tells everyone what happened. The police went to go investigate and found that everyone was dead. A little while later, my dad finds out that his uncle had quite a few mental issues and was supposed to be taking medication for it, which he wasn't. That is the reason why he went crazy that night. As you can imagine, my dad was traumatized and had nightmares about his uncle for a long time. Once again, I assure you this story is true. I can see it in my dad's eyes whenever he tells me this story, and I wish I could have some sort of news article about this, but it was the 1970s, and it was Fiji, so there is no way I can find anything. This happened a couple of months ago in February. I'm in northern New Jersey, so it gets pretty cold up here, especially at night. I live on 10 plus acres, and a popular trail that runs through the entire northern part of the state runs parallel to my property. We can't see the trail from our house, and people on the trail can't view our house. With all that being said, it's very private where my house is located. I'm 21, female, and I work overnights. So when I come home, everyone else is leaving for work. I'm home alone until about 6 or 7 at night. With the winter, it gets dark around 5:30-ish. So one evening, as I was walking to my kitchen, and as usual, as I walk through the house, I look out to the fields. The side of my house that's facing the fields has these big windows and sliding doors, pretty much like a glass house. And less than a quarter mile away, I see a man walking from one side of our property towards the trail. He wasn't really walking, more like hunched over and skipping. I really can't say for sure. Thanks to having livestock, we have binoculars handy to check on them. So I grab them and look at the guy. Then I focus in on him. He looks directly at me. I'm looking at him and he's staring back at me with this creepy fucking grin. We look at each other until he climbs through the woods and gets on the trail. He's now out of sight. I call my dad and he says it must have been a coincidence and he might have just wanted to get back on the trail. I brush it off and I try to get more sleep before work. The next day, same time, I see the man again. This time, I'm not smack dab in the middle of a huge window. I'm hiding with the binoculars. I focus in on him again. I jump back, because he's fucking staring right into the binoculars. How the hell did he know where I was? I call my dad, and he didn't answer. I say to myself, everything is locked, you're fine, he's back on the trail by now. It's now 5, and between the snow on the ground and the clear sky and the sun about to fall, it's still pretty bright in the fields. I walk towards the kitchen, and I see the man. He's not walking, he's just standing, staring right at me, closer to the house than before. I'm freaking out, and I'm pissed because I got it into my head that he was just cutting through a private property, and now he's just standing there, staring. I can see the grin on his face, without binoculars. That is how close he was. I pick up my cell phone and I dial 911. He's still standing there. I explain everything to the dispatcher. Around here, it could take an hour for a cop to arrive. Lucky for me, it only took 15 minutes. The man is still out there standing and staring when the cops show up. I pointed at the police who are now coming down my driveway. The man turns his head and looks at them, turns back to me, and smiles even wider. He then fucking bolts right towards me, smiling like a fucking maniac. It wasn't a genuine smile. It was a forced fake smile with just his mouth. If you can picture that. I run towards the front door and out to the cops. They come out of their cars, and one enters my house, and two more go around each side of the house. They caught and arrested him. They said when they found him, he was pressed up against the opposite side of the window, where I was originally standing at, still smiling. I don't know what came of him, but I know I won't be seeing him again. Crazy fucking smiling standing man. Don't ever come on my property again. Living alone is always a risk. I had just moved to a new city, and I was getting used to a new routine. At my old job, I worked from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., and I was luxuriating to a regular 9-to-5, with completely free weekends. One of these weekends started out the worst way I could imagine. I woke up early, as I typically did, a bad habit. I wanted to run in a nearby park, but it was too dark outside. I made coffee, got dressed for my run, and decided to relax on the couch and read until it was light out. Some backstory. This apartment, which I don't live in anymore, was a garden-style apartment on the ground floor of a four-story townhouse. I had two windows facing the street and a patio in front of my door, and two steps up to the street from the patio. The city I live in is huge, but my neighborhood was very suburban. Families, homes, versus apartment buildings and businesses, and also schools. Not typically busy at any time of the day, but there was a busy street four blocks away. That morning, I lounged with coffee while waiting for the sun to rise. It was a Saturday, so I wasn't shocked when I saw a figure stumbling by the front windows, slowly and swerving. There were a few bars and walking distance. A drunk wasn't a new development, until he turned around. I guess he was attracted by my illuminated windows or a moving shadow. Minutes later, the shadow trudged down the two steps, hesitating at the patio. Then he moved to the window, taking care to slide between the bushes and peer inside. I had curtains on these windows, but they were sheer. I didn't know how much he could see from the outside, but I froze. It seemed like years, but it was probably about 5 minutes. Then he moved toward my door. I had a gate with two doors barring this unwanted person from entering, but he wasn't deterred. I heard the front gate open. Although it was locked, it wasn't hard to reach in and unlock it. And then he started jiggling the first doorknob. I should not have been worried. I had two doors with three locks on each. The knob lock, deadbolt, and Jimmy lock. But something about his determination and the darkness of night had me rushing to the back of the apartment. My landlords, who owned the townhouse above me, had a fenced-in garden. I ran out there to call the cops. When I was waiting on the phone with the cops, I almost felt safe, until I heard scratching at the fence and a jiggling of the handle to the garden door. It's about 15 feet tall and would be too difficult to climb. I immediately went inside to find the cops banging at my door. I sent them around to the garden entrance, but they never found the guy, just a dirty screwdriver on the ground. I never got an update, so I assume this guy was never caught or tried breaking in anywhere else in the neighborhood. But either way, let's not meet. Back in the early 2000s, around the age of 13, I'm 26 now, I lived in upstate New York in the town of Rhinebeck. Rhinebeck is a pretty old and fairly sleepy place, all things considered. Our house was high on a hill surrounded by dense woods on all sides, except for the street. The home was quiet and incredibly secluded. Our nearest neighbor was about a quarter mile down a winding and poorly maintained road with only a singular streetlight too dim to offer much visibility. For this story, I'll need to give you an idea to the layout of the house. It was at least two stories. The stairs was situated in the middle of the house. Our most common point of entry was through the two-car garage. The front door was to the right of the garage entry. And standing from that door, you could see up the stairs, to your left center, and see to the top. At the top of the stairs, my parents' room was on the immediate right, and to the left was a hallway with two rooms side by side at the very end, mine and my brother's. My room was situated over the garage. Now for the story, I'd always been very on edge about where we lived, as it gave off a sort of Mothman Prophecies vibe. You could hear every twig snap, every coyote and bird, and when it got dark out, it was dark. Late one night, I had long since gone to bed, when I was jarred awake by a sound below my room. I sat stock still for a moment, listening to the deafening silence before accepting that I had been dreaming. Just as I started to drift off, I started to hear a scratching sound. It was slow at first and hard to make out, almost like the sound of metal scraping against slate. It started to become more deliberate, and I pinpointed it to the garage door that entered into the house. My first thought was to go to my parents, but it occurred to me that if I stood outside their door, I would have been easily seen at the top of the stairs should someone get in, or already be in. The noise continued, and I finally crawled out of bed as quietly as possible to lock my bedroom door, and then I bolted back. It felt like hours passed, but I don't know exactly when the scratching came to a stop. By morning, I had pushed it to the back of my mind as a dream. Sitting around the kitchen the next day, I told my parents about the dream. They looked concerned, and out of curiosity, they went to look at the garage door, which was a very heavy metal furnished door. What we found on the other side were pry marks, as though someone had repeatedly jammed a crowbar into the doorframe. I stared in disbelief and mild terror. My father changed the lock on the outermost door that led into the garage that very day. I grew up in a suburb of Raleigh, North Carolina, that has a virtually non-existent crime rate. My father and I moved there when I was 6. He was always busy, so I pretty much had to raise myself. So naturally, I attended school there, made all of my lifelong relationships there, so on and so forth. In 2008, I was a senior in high school. I had a very close-knit group of friends, primarily composed of people I had known since middle school. One such friend just recently came back from Holly Hill, which is our local mental hospital, after a suicide attempt. Matt had been gone for a couple of weeks. I saw him in the courtyard before heading for class. Unfortunately, I didn't have time to talk, so all I said to him was, "Welcome back. I missed you." I did not want to risk being late for class, but I would have if I had known that would be the last thing I would ever say to him. Matt suffered from depression and dementia for years, but he kept a pretty good rap on the details, so none of his friends really had a big inkling of how severe it was until the aforementioned suicide attempt. We got out of school for Thanksgiving break, and one of our mutual friends messaged me on Facebook and asked if I would like to go paintballing with them on the night of the 30th. I had to turn them down because I had to see my grandparents the next morning for a late Thanksgiving celebration. It wasn't a big deal, just kind of a disappointment. Break came and went, we went back to school, and Matt was absent again. There had been a rumor floating around that he had run away from home and had gone back to Washington, D.C. to look for his birth mother, but I wasn't sure I believed that, especially that he would go off on this long-term trip without at least mentioning it to me first. In between switching classes, I tried to call his cell phone, but it was off. I didn't think anything of it. A few days later, during lunchtime, there was a buzz around the school that Allegra, our mutual friend from earlier, and Adele, someone else who I was more of acquaintance with than friends, but I still knew of him, had been taken out of class and arrested. We had no idea what had happened, but I had a strange feeling that it had something to do with Matt's absence. After that, all I could really think about was where Matt was, and the fact that Allegra sat behind me in Shakespeare class, and that she was so tired that she slept through the class the day we came back from break. The school tried to keep everything quiet in regards to the students theorizing and talking to one another. But it was high school, and word travels fast. When we weren't talking, we were texting each other about it. Our local news website reported in an article that 4 of Matt's friends had been arrested in connection with a body found in Allegra's parents' summer home. You guessed it. It was Matt. 2 years afterward, Allegra and Adil and the 2 people from Matt's circle of friends went on trial. Allegra received 2 consecutive 20-year terms for a conspiracy to commit murder and murder in the second degree. Adil received the same. The 2 others in the trial received a life sentence for first-degree murder. I watched the trial unfold. They killed him on the night of November 30th, the night they asked me to come paintballing with them. There was a period of time where I kicked myself for not going that night. I like to think that I would have had some, if a little, influence in stopping them. Growing up, I always wanted to go on a bike ride at night. Something about it seemed really cool to me. It wasn't till I was about 13 that my mom finally let me. She told me to wear my helmet, have my phone, and take a flashlight. She set the parameters for where I was allowed to go. She gave me about 4 miles, which was a lot to me, so right after sunset, I was off. I loved it. There were no people walking their dogs, no kids running around. The temperature was perfect, etc. It was really fun. So fun that I ignored the limits my mom had set. You see, where I was biking was all walking paths. It was one of those grassy areas in between 2 neighborhoods. There's this long path that went at least 600 feet at a 25-degree angle. And I was flying down this hill, having an absolute blast, and darted right through the parameters. My mom set these limits for a reason. Everything on the inside was close to houses and people. The outside, more specifically, the place where the path I was on led to, was barren. I rode along this path for about 10 minutes before I could only see some of the lights of the houses on the inside of the city limits. After 15 minutes of riding along this dirt path, I hear singing. It sounded about 30 to 40 feet in front of me. I stopped riding to hear it better. It was a woman's voice. She was singing Eleanor Rigby by the Beatles. But she wasn't singing the words, just the melody of the vocals. Her voice was strange. You know how when you have phlegm in your throat, your voice gets all scratchy? That's what her voice sounded like. I inch forward to try and see her. I get close enough to see the silhouette of her bouncing up and down, like she was headbanging. I decide to get my flashlight out. I'm thinking that this person is in need of help or something, or maybe it's just an insane person and the light will scare them away. So I take the flashlight out of my pocket, point it at her, and turn it on. The moment the light hit her, she stopped moving completely. She was facing away from me. She had disgusting hair that seemed to be sticking together in clumps. Some of her hair was ripped off, too. She was wearing a very oversized, bright red hoodie. I was almost too scared to move. I think she was too. I conjured up as much bravery as I could and said, "Sorry," in a very, "oops, this is the wrong room" kind of way. She didn't respond. I turn off the flashlight and put it back in my pocket. Just as I was turning my bike around, she screams. She screams in an awful, awful high-pitched voice. I damn near shit myself as I throw myself back onto my bike. I hear her voice getting closer to me. I book it as fast as I can. I don't look behind me. I don't stop pedaling. Her screaming grew quieter and quieter until it dissolved into the howling of the wind. I'm in my mid-20s, and I consider myself to be a pretty small woman, both in height and weight. I've never taken any self-defense classes, and I would be in pretty big trouble if someone were to actually attack me. At present, I live in a small suburb outside of Boston with 2 other female roommates. We live in a condominium complex that has roughly 200 units, and our condo happens to be in the furthest corner of the grounds. We were the last unit in a row of 10, with woods to our left and back. The area we live in is widely regarded as a high crime area. It's the sketchy part of town. I was never genuinely concerned about my safety until one night, in October of 2015. I had just flown back into Boston from a work trip in Tampa, Florida. My flight arrived at Logan Airport around 10:30 p.m. In between gathering my luggage and car, I didn't make it back to my apartment until midnight. I locked my car, grabbed my suitcase, and headed inside to my empty apartment. I wasn't worried about staying at the condo alone, as it was a pretty typical situation. My two roommates were often working late or staying with their boyfriends. As always, I locked the screen door, then the wooden door, and I felt like that was enough protection from the outside world. I was greeted by my cat when I went into my room. The temperature was unusually warm for October, so I opened all of my windows and crawled into bed. I should note here, as I mentioned before, the backside of our apartment is surrounded by woods. We have a row of parking spaces directly behind us, but other than that, it's strictly forest. That particular night, I was lucky enough to find a parking spot that lies directly beneath my bedroom window. At 3:30 a.m., I woke up to footsteps and rustling outside. I figured that it was one of the other residents either getting back from the bar or grabbing something from their vehicle. So I rolled over and tried to fall back asleep. After about 4 to 5 minutes of loud rustling, I decided to check out what was going on. To my horror, a massive man wearing all black clothing and a black mask was inside the passenger door of my car, going through my glove box. I was so shocked to see that someone was inside my car that it took me a few moments to understand what was going on. Realizing that someone had broken into my car, I immediately panicked. I have a spare apartment key inside of my glove box, and my apartment door was only a few steps away from where he was standing. I knew that fleeing was not an option, as he was blocking my only exit. I also knew that if he were to use the key to get inside my condo, I would likely be in a very dangerous situation. Out of pure stupidity, I grabbed my car keys and hit the lock button, which causes my car to beep. The loud beep startled the man who was inside my car so much that he backed up and stumbled on the curb. Within seconds, he looked up at my bedroom window, and our eyes met. He knew that I had seen him in my car, and to my dismay, he stared without flinching. I was so terrified that I backed up from the window and immediately ran into my roommate's closet. I dialed 911 and reported the situation in a really hushed whisper. I was fully expecting the man to break in and find me inside her room. It took the officers 12 minutes to arrive at my condo, by which time the guy had taken off. I still don't know how he was able to get into my car that night, as I was sure I had locked it. Amazingly, nothing was taken. I didn't have much in there anyway. But the scary thing was that the latch on our screen door was completely broken off. I didn't hear him trying to gain entry into my house, but I was also in the closet and on the phone with a police dispatcher. So, who knows? All I can say is I'm so lucky that I had my windows open that night and interrupted him. Otherwise, he might have used the key to get in. This happened to me about 6 or 7 years ago. I'm a female and I was 17 at the time. So it was the beginning of the summer and I was traveling to my summer home like I did every year. I live in a small southeastern European country, and this is pretty normal for most people here. I would usually travel by train overnight because I would get to sleep for most of the trip. The train took about 8 hours. It didn't cross a great distance. It was just really slow. Anyway, I've done the same trip alone a couple of times already and never really had a problem. Also, my country is pretty safe, so taking this trip on my own was never really a concern for me or my parents. The train left at 11 p.m. and was scheduled to arrive at 7 in the morning, meaning that I had 7 to 8 hours of sleep, which was great. At first, I was alone in the compartment, but after I got settled in, a girl about my age asked me if she could join me in my compartment, and I said yes. We started talking a bit, you know, the usual. Where are you from? How old? What do you do? Even though I was comfortable traveling alone and was bigger than her and a year older, I was still happy that she was there. We talked until midnight and decided to get some sleep. Since the train was pretty empty and it was just the two of us in our compartment, we could both lie down. The compartment had three seats on each side, so we could spread across three seats each. I just started to doze off when I heard our compartment door opening. There was a man standing there. He looked at us for a second and then asked,
"Do you have any room for me?"
Now, what was weird about this was, first of all, the train was pretty empty, so I was certain that there was other completely empty compartments. Secondly, he saw both of us lying down, taking up all the space, so really there was no need to ask. And finally, it was the way he phrased it, "Do we have any room for him?" I squirmed a little bit and started to answer, but he left the second I started squirming. I remember him closing the door as I was about to answer, and I thought it was weird, but whatever. My sleepy brain didn't really want to bother, so I forgot about it instantly. I think the girl and I exchanged a what the fuck look, and that was it. However, not more than 5 minutes passed, and he was back. Again, the same. He opened the door and asked us if we had any room for him. I was a stupid, scared kid back then, so I just stayed silent and pretended to be asleep. Luckily, the girl was smarter than me, and though she kinda looked timid, she sorta yelled at him, "No, you can see that there is no room. We're trying to sleep." He stared at us with this empty, vacant expression, but I saw something in his eyes that can only be described as sinister. He then closed the door and left. I kinda chuckled, probably my nerves, and she smiled at me, and that was it. I somehow managed to fall asleep again, although it was a very light sleep, and I kept waking up throughout the night. That was probably for the better. The girl and I went our separate ways in the morning, as we were both traveling further. I didn't have Facebook back then, so I didn't stay in contact with her, and I had forgotten her name over the years. Although for some reason as I'm writing this, I want to say her name was Ivana. I will, however, be forever grateful for her for possibly saving me that night, and for teaching me that you can always stand up for yourself, even if you're a small, fragile-looking girl. We didn't get a good look at the guy because it was dark, but my impression back then was that he was between 30 and 40, and he had no business to hang out with us. If he wanted to sleep, there was plenty of other empty compartments. That's why I think he had something else in mind. I was so happy that the girl was there because I have no idea what I would have done on my own. I'd like to think I would have stood up for myself, but I honestly don't know. I'm a 29-year-old guy from Brazil. I'm a teacher at a university here, and I practice kung fu in my spare time. The political scene in Brazil is insane these days. I've even heard stories about people getting attacked on the streets just because they were wearing red, which happens to be the color of President Dilma's political party. A few days ago, I was heading home from work late one night. It was around 11 p.m. I got on the bus, and as there was no seats available, I just stood near the exit door as I usually do. I got my MP3 player from my backpack. Yeah, I still carry around an MP3 player. And I turned on some Black Dahlia Murder. I was there minding my own business, silently singing along, when I noticed a guy sitting in the back of the bus. He was staring at me with this really creepy look on his face. I thought it was funny at first, but he didn't stop staring. I figured he must have been lost in his thoughts and just happened to be looking in my direction. So I went to the other door and I looked at him again. You guessed it, he was still staring at me. I started paying attention to this guy. Even sitting, he was huge. His arms were as thick as my legs. He looked like the fucking Hulk from those old movies. I was really tired from work that day, so I shrugged it off and went back to minding my own business. I mean, maybe he was just jealous of my awesome beard. The point is, I had no energy to deal with that right then. And maybe I was just being paranoid. My mistake. My stop was coming up, so I pulled the string. I don't know how buses work where you guys live, but here we have little strings attached to the ceiling, and when we want to get off, we just pull. A few seconds later, the bus driver stopped, and I got off, but not before seeing the huge guy get up. I started walking, feeling a bit nervous, and when I looked back, there he was, tailing me. He didn't even bother pretending he was going home or something. He had his eyes locked on me the entire time. I started walking faster, and I could hear his footsteps also picking up the pace. My street was on the next left, and it's very, very dark out. I realized that I would have to run if I didn't want this dude to catch up to me. As soon as I turned the corner, I ran like there was no tomorrow, which was exactly the case, I think. I heard the guy start to run. There was no way I would outrun him. My house was still pretty far, so I decided to go all in, and I stopped. I turned to face him, took off my backpack, held it in my hand, and waited. He yelled something to the effect of,
"I will kill you, you commie fuck."
He then attacked me. I threw my backpack at his face. When it was just about to hit, he dodged. I even saw the smile on his face. Like he thought it was fun that I fought back. Well, it turns out, that's exactly what I was waiting for. Remember how I told you guys that I practice Kung Fu? I've been practicing for over 10 years, and when he dodged the backpack, my right foot was waiting to meet his jaw. It was only for a fraction of a second, but I saw his smile turn into a what the fuck expression as my foot plowed into his face. His eyes rolled back into his head, and he dropped to the sidewalk. I grabbed my backpack, and before I booked it back to my house, I saw a shiny object sticking out of his pocket. A knife. This guy wanted to do some serious damage, and all of that because I have a beard and was wearing a red shirt. If it wasn't for my passion for martial arts, I probably would have never saw my wife and kids again. I won't lie to you and say that I had it all under control, that it was okay, and that I didn't feel scared. I was scared as fuck. By the time I got home, my legs were shaking so bad, I had to ask my wife to help me to the nearest chair. She asked what was going on, and I told her. We called the police, but by the time they got there, he was gone. We are moving to a new place in a few days. After all, he followed me to my street, and he could be looking for me. The good part is, my wife has always nagged me for doing my Kung Fu. After what happened, she ordered me to keep practicing, and is thinking about joining as well as bringing the kids along too. At least something good came out of it. In 2003, I was a senior in college. I had the opportunity to travel to Chicago to work at an international trade show for my family business. Trade shows are all about getting new customers, and this particular show brings in tens of thousands of potential customers from every corner of the world who may be needing some industrial equipment, conveyors, case erectors, robots, etc. When I'm working at one of these things, I have to be outgoing, perky, and friendly, so when anyone would walk by, I would attempt to engage them in conversation, because conversations turn into leads, and leads turn into sales. except when the only thing the guy wants to buy is a bride. It was the second day of the show, and my dad and the other salesman were off getting lunch when a very short, unattractive man in his mid-60s stops by our booth. I engage him, and we discuss his industry, pharmaceuticals. I scanned his badge, and then he didn't leave. Instead, he started complimenting me. And me being 19 and working my first show, I didn't quite know what my boundaries were yet. I took the compliments as gracefully as I could and tried to direct him down a more business-related topic. It didn't work. He started obviously leering and telling me how well off he was and how I would make a great wife. But after about 15 minutes and other customers coming up, he picked up one of my dad's business cards and left. I thought that was that. I laughed about this later with one of the guys across the aisle, and even with my dad, until that night, when my dad's cell phone started ringing and the call was for me. My Prince Charming had called every hotel associated with the show until he found where we were staying and was waiting outside the hotel in a limo. He explained that he wanted to take me to dinner so that he could talk to me about taking me back to Jordan with him and becoming his wife. Me still being stupidly concerned about alienating a future customer, I told him that I had dinner plans and that I couldn't meet with him. He said,
"Fine, tomorrow then."
We argued back and forth about it for a minute, and I eventually told him something along the lines of,
"No, that wouldn't be appropriate. I have dinner plans with vendors all week."
Then I hung up, and Dad ignored a few missed calls from him. I was mercilessly teased about my Jordanian husband at dinner. However, when the guy showed up at the booth again the next day with an entourage and tried to negotiate an honest-to-God marriage contract with my dad, it wasn't quite as funny. I'm not sure what exactly my dad said to him, but we didn't sell any conveyors to the creepy pharmaceutical plant owner from Jordan, and I still get nervous about seeing him at shows. I work in retail and I have a very unique name. This happened a few years ago when I first started. I work at a 24-hour convenience store, and at this point, I was working the graveyard shift. I'm used to all types of unsavory folks, but there was this one guy who left me very unsettled. It was about 3 a.m., and unfortunately I was working alone because my coworker decided to call out the last minute. The store was dead, and I was packing out a delivery when he walked in. He was a short, stocky black guy, a little older than me, probably late 20s to early 30s. I looked up from the task at hand and greeted him with a friendly smile and asked him if he needed help with anything. He grinned and looked me up and down, his brown eyes darkening with lust.
"Yes, did you sell condoms?"
I nodded and pointed him to the health and beauty section and proceeded to make my way to the register. He browses for a bit, and typically, he picked up a box of Magnums and some of those herbal sexual supplement pills.
"So how are you tonight?"
he inquired. I told him I was fine, working hard and anxious to go home. His eyes traveled up and down my body, settling on my name tag, which was pinned just beneath my left breast. I felt a little uncomfortable. I've never been comfortable with people staring at me, and his eyes lingered longer than necessary. He asked how to pronounce my name, and I tell him. He says it's nice, very politely. I say thank you and begin to scan and bag his items, trying to avoid eye contact. He then asked if I had a boyfriend. Truthfully, I say yes. He comments that he must be a lucky man, and he wishes that he could be in his shoes. Again, I smile uncomfortably, and as we're supposed to do, I asked him if he needed anything else.
"Not unless I can have you."
Now I'm getting annoyed. I ignore his comment and proceeded to tell him his total. He swipes his card, I complete the transaction, and I tell him to have a good night. He thanks me and asks me if I'm working by myself. No, my coworker is downstairs doing some paperwork. I lied. He grins and says,
No, he isn't. I've been watching you since 12. I haven't seen another person here all this time. Are you afraid?
I frowned. You've been watching me? That's not creepy at all. I tell him that he needs to leave if he's done shopping, because I have work to complete. Once again, he laughs. I thought he was going to argue, but a group of drunken guys walk in, and he leaves. Later that night, I check my Facebook, and I have a friend request. Guess who it's from? Again, I have a very unique name. Only two people on Facebook have it. I block and delete the friend request. Next morning, as I'm walking to the subway station, the wanted poster on the token booth catches my eye. The face is familiar. It was the creep from my store. He was wanted for sexual assault and battery. The incident happened more than a month ago. I told my manager, who called the police and gave them our tip. I don't know if he was ever caught, but please, let's not meet outside my store, and I still don't feel comfortable with name tags. So this happened a while back when I was in my early 20s. I was working at a small retail store in my town's mall. It was coming up to the end half of the day, and I don't know how I noticed it, but an older man, probably in his 50s, I'm not sure, had walked past my store about 3 or 4 times. Not consecutively, just every now and again. I worked at one of those little custom jewelry stores, so it's odd for an older male to be walking past so many times, but I didn't think anything of it. It came closing time, and I had left to catch my bus home at about 6:30 p.m. I remember it was transitioning into winter, because it was dark out by then. I'm a very paranoid person, and I still live by the rules of stranger danger. So even now, when I leave work, I make sure I change into an outfit that's less fashionable. I don't like drawing attention to myself in any way possible, so I try to make sure I'm as covered up and as average looking as I can be. I don't know why, but I have that disease where I attract all the wrong attention for no reason at all. So as I said, I was waiting for my bus home, sitting by myself at the town center's bus terminal. And guess who walks past? The older man. At this point, I kind of felt uneasy, but in my head, I tried to make reason prevail, as many people take the buses all the damn time. My bus showed up and I got on, and well, you can guess who got on after me. I remember sitting at one of the seats facing inward, the ones for wheelchairs and prams, and he sat at the first seat above the steps. I remember staring forward, feeling his eyes burning into me. I kept trying to use my peripheral vision to see if he was looking at me, but not wanting him to know that I noticed him. The whole bus ride, I waited to see if he got off before my stop, thinking it was just my over-anxious, paranoid mind working overtime, until I pressed the button for my stop. I waited until the last possible second to press it, and as I stood up, he did too. I went to walk to the front door of the bus, and he exited the rear. At that moment, as soon as he stepped off, I sat back down. I had no idea where the bus went after my stop, but I honestly didn't fucking care. I will never forget the look on his face as the bus drove off. I've never seen such hatred and anger in a person's face than I did through that window. His face is burnt into my memory like a photograph. It still absolutely terrifies me to this day. I have no idea what would have happened to me if I had gotten off at my bus stop that night, but I'm glad my paranoia was so intense that I didn't. This happened a couple of years ago. back when I was a dancer at a gentleman's club in Virginia. It was the most upscale place in the city, but it still was more or less catered to the regular clientele. There was a man named George who used to come in and see me a couple of times every week. He would buy dances in VIP rooms and would always tip me very well, while saying things like, "I can't believe you don't have a boyfriend," and, "When are you going to let me take you out to dinner?" The thing is, I did have a boyfriend. However, much like my real name, my personal life is not anyone's business, and strip clubs are a fantasy environment. If these men knew that I had a boyfriend and a life outside of dancing, I probably would not have made as much money as I did. One night I was getting dressed to leave, and I was excited to get home as my boyfriend had just come back from a tour he was on. He's in a band, and he was waiting at home for me. The club closed at 2 a.m., so I usually was walking out of the door and to my car around 2:30. Usually we have a bouncer that walks us out. But since it was a slow night, we only had one bouncer still on the clock, and he was off doing something. I was in a hurry, so I just ran to my car alone. As soon as I started up my car and turned out of the parking lot, another car turned its lights on and pulled out behind me. I didn't think too much of it and continued on my way home, until I realized that every turn I made, the car also made. He followed me onto the highway and onto my exit. My boyfriend and I lived on the outskirts of the city in a heavily wooded area, where houses are pretty few and far between. So as soon as the car took the same exit onto the gravel road that leads to the area my house is in, I called my boyfriend. Now, my boyfriend at the time was a really big guy, and he had a really bad temper. As soon as I pulled into our driveway, with the other car still behind me, he ran out from behind his tour van with a baseball bat and two of our dogs following close behind. He told me to stay in my car, so I was trying to see who was following me without actually getting out, and of course, it was George. My boyfriend managed to hit the hood of his car with a bat before George could reverse down the gravel road and disappear. I was scared because he knew where I lived now, but my boyfriend assured me that there was nothing to worry about anymore and that he had most likely adequately deterred George from ever coming back. I mean, I guess a huge tattooed guy with a baseball bat and two giant pit bulls is a pretty good deterrent. I told my managers at work about the incident the next day, and they banned George from the club. A couple of months later, he tried to come in, but the bouncer stopped him, and his only explanation was, "I thought that she didn't have a boyfriend."